Excellent. Thank you very much for that introduction. And first of all, can I start off by saying thank you very much for the kind invitation to come along here this morning to speak with you. As has been said, my name is Lee Cain and I'm the Regional Anti-Bullying Coordinator for the Northern Ireland Anti-Bullying Forum. This morning I want to spend just a little while concentrating our mind on this topic. What is bullying? What's it all about? What does it mean to us as adults? What does it mean to the young people that we give care to? And how can we prevent it happening? And how can we respond if and when it does happen? Before we move on to that, let me tell you a little bit about the Northern Ireland Anti-Bullying Forum. And I'm sure many of you will be aware of us. You may have seen various parts of the work that we do. But let me tell you a little bit more about us. NIABF, the Northern Ireland Anti-Bullying Forum, is essentially a collection of organisations, a regional forum bringing together, it's currently 25 organisations, both statutory sector and voluntary sector organisations working right across Northern Ireland, all of whom are committed to ending the bullying of children and young people in our schools and in our communities. When I stand here as the coordinator of the Northern Ireland Anti-Bullying Forum, and I use the logo on the screen behind me, I essentially am representing all of these different organisations. And many of the organisations on the screen behind me you will be familiar with. Some of them you may not. We bring together some of the key players in the statutory sector. You can see there the Department of Education, who have the regional remit for the policy in this area. We also have the five Education and Library Boards. Who knows what's going to happen to them? We also bring together some of the key children's organisations, the large children's sector's organisations, like the National Children's Bureau, Save the Children, Barnardo's, NSPCC, Childline, who are also with us today, Action for Children. We have some other organisations working with specific groups of people that we need to support, for example, the NASUWT, the National Association of School Teachers Union of Women Teachers, I think is what that stands for originally, representing the teachers' unions. We have USET, who represent all teacher training providers, so Stranmillis, St Mary's, Queen's, University of Ulster. We also have groups representing particular sections of our society, particular groups of young people, or particular thematic areas. So, for example, Belong and NICEM, the Northern Ireland Council for Ethnic Minorities. We have the Rainbow Project in Glenny, Gay and Lesbian Youth Northern Ireland. We have Community Relations in Schools, Chris representing an anti-sectarianism. We have the National Deaf Children Society, MenCap representing the voice of learning disability. So a very wide range of member organisations and a very wide range of expertise feeding into the forum. You will also see in the bottom corner Nikki, the Northern Ireland Commissioner for Children and Young People, who oversees the work of the forum and links very closely with us on their campaigns in this area. To give a little bit about the background to the forum was officially launched in 2005 after it had been brought together in 2004. To give you a little bit of the context behind this, in 2002 the Department of Education commissioned a study called The Nature and Extent of Bullying in Schools in Northern Ireland. This study was then followed by the 2003 Education and Libraries Order. And it was the 2003 Education and Libraries Order that put on schools a statutory duty to safeguard and promote the welfare of their pupils, to have in place measures to protect their pupils, and to have in place policies to prevent bullying, policies which were drawn up in consultation with registered pupils and with their parents. So with all the activity in the world of anti-bullying at the beginning of this millennium, it was felt very much that we needed to provide support to schools. We needed to provide a centralised support to promote a more coordinated approach right across Northern Ireland in how we deal with this area. Save the Children, based on the work that they did towards the end of the 90s and into the early 2000s, was approached by the Department of Education to establish a group, some form of working party, advisory group, what grew in to be a forum. I'm very pleased to say that we're joined today by one of the original members of that forum, one of the people who sat around that table on the 24th of August 2004, almost 10 years ago, and Kathy Bell from the Department of Education will be speaking to you later today. We were hosted by Save the Children right through from the beginning of the forum in 2004 until 2011, and many of you, I'm sure, will be aware of the work of Save the Children and the fact that over the last number of years, the Save the Children strategy has focused very much on eradicating child poverty, both here in Northern Ireland, across the UK, and indeed on a global scale. Bullying doesn't fit within that agenda. Bullying is not an issue for poor children. It is not an issue for rich children. It is not an issue that can be put into one of these demographic areas. Bullying is an issue that we need to be aware of right across our society. Therefore, it was felt very strongly that SAVE was no longer the correct host, and we moved to the National Children's Bureau just down the street. Currently, our chair is Dr. Noel Purdy, one of the leading experts in bullying in Northern Ireland from Stranmillers University. And the Vice-Chair is Philomena McDermott, who works across the Southern and Western boards as a Senior Education Advisor. So what do we do? What is the Anti-Bullying Forum all about? One of the key activities of the forum is to raise awareness of the profound impact of bullying on the lives of children and young people. To raise awareness that it is not just a normal part of growing up. It is not character building. It is not just something that happens in every school. It is something that we have to be very aware of. We have to be acutely aware of the very serious and damaging impact it can have on the lives of children and young people. And we're going to be looking at that more this morning. We look at how do we support schools. Schools are required to have anti-bullying policies, as I've already said. How do we support schools to ensure that their anti-bullying policies are high quality, to ensure that they meet the job that they're designed to do? Every year we lead a campaign across Northern Ireland. I'm sure many of you will be aware of Anti-Bullying Week, which happens in November. The third week in November is our flagship campaign, if you like, and we use that week to really focus our attention, to focus the mind of teachers, of young people, of the community at large on this area around a different theme every year. And over at the stand just beside me, I've got some of the resources and posters that we've used in previous Anti-Bullying Week campaigns. And if you would like any of those, please don't hesitate. Looking at the support materials that we have for children, young people, for their parents and carers, how do we make sure that we have that support in place by the way of leaflets, cards, pamphlets, signposting to other information? And again, a lot of that is over on the table. And finally, the voice of children and young people. Making sure that the voice of young people is reflected within the anti-bullying policy. That children and young people have an intricate say in what happens to them and the policies and practices that affect their lives. The 2003 legislation requires that schools consult with pupils and their parents to ensure that the policies are robust policies that fit their needs. And at the Anti-Bullying Forum, we are strongly believe that we need to ensure that the voice of children and young people is in our work, is in our policy, is in our practice. So what do we want to talk about today? Well, if we look at what I want, when I was first asked to come along here today and deliver this presentation, I had to think about what are the messages that I want you to take away from today? What do we want to talk about? And on the screen behind me is just some of the key points I want us to think about. To increase and develop a better understanding of what do we mean by the term bullying. To explore the different types of bullying behaviour, both the ways that it can happen, the ways that bullying behaviour can be displayed, and also the motivating factors around bullying behaviour. To consider our values, our ethos, individually and collectively, and how they can play into supporting the building of an anti-bullying culture. To identify the ways in which we can prevent bullying behaviour, and also to understand how we might respond if bullying behaviour is taking place. I want to start with a quote. Understanding what bullying is and how it affects students allows us to be better equipped to effectively stop bullying behaviour. So before we start looking at what practice do we put in place, what policy do we put in place, we look very much at what does it mean? What is bullying? And that is the first question I want us to consider. What is it? What do we mean by the term bullying? What is it? Many of us will have come here today with an idea in our mind, a definition, a thought about, I'm going to be talking about bullying and this is what it is. What is that and how much does that communicate right across the floor? I want you to take a few minutes and just work and have a chat to the people beside you. I want you to have a think about what do you mean by bullying? When you hear the B word, what is it that's in your mind? What do you take from that? I'll give you a few minutes just to have a chat to the people next to you about that. Okay, folks. As I kind of took a little wander around and listened in to some of the conversations, I was hearing some really interesting discussions around different parts of an anti-bullying definition, or of a bullying definition, rather. And it's quite interesting that we all have a concept in our mind of what we're talking about whenever we hear this word. And this, for me, is perhaps one of the most overused words that we have in our language. And I like to, every time a series of Big Brother starts, I like to see how many days we can get into the series before we have a Daily Mail headline talking about the bullying on Big Brother. Or I like to, whenever something's going on in politics, and look and see how long is it before someone accuses someone else of bullying others. And it's what do we actually mean? It's a word that we use so often. It's quite interesting that English is one of the few languages around the world that has the word bullying. Many languages don't have an equivalent. I am, as you will see from your pack, my degree is in French. I studied French at university. And in French, for many years, there wasn't a word for bullying. There was no translation. So when I tried to explain what I did to my French friends, it was quite difficult to put into words what it was we were talking about. This is the NIBF definition of bullying. This is the definition that we use. NIBF defines bullying as the repeated use of power by one or more persons intentionally to harm, hurt, or adversely affect the rights and needs of another or others. NIBF defines bullying as the repeated use of power by one or more persons intentionally to harm, hurt, or adversely affect the rights and needs of another or others. And as we go through, I'm going to try and break that down a little bit, but let's just look at some of those words that I put up in red. Bullying is a repeated action. It happens again and again, a one-off incident. Whilst it may be unacceptable behaviour, whilst it needs to be dealt with and it needs to be challenged, is not on its own bullying. Bullying happens over a period of time. There is an idea of a passage of time, of it continuously happening. And the difference between that and a single incident can be quite marked. Bullying often involves an imbalance of power. It's where one person has more power, thinks they have more power, is given more power, takes more power, and is therefore more powerful than someone else. That can be a physical power, it can be a social power, it can be about status. There's many different ways to look at the concept of power. Bullying is an intentional action. I intend to hurt you. I intend to cause you harm. I mean to do it. You don't bully somebody by accident. And this is quite a difficult concept to get our heads around. Because I often hear people say, yes, he was bullying her, but you know, he didn't mean to. He didn't even realize he was doing it. Well, no, there's always that intention behind it. There's that intention to cause someone pain. And finally, rights. I don't want to say too much more about rights because I'm going to look at that a little bit in just a second or two, but it looks very much at the rights of children and how bullying is an infringement on their rights. Here's just a couple of pictures. Do you think are these bullying? So in a couple of little, this little cartoon, you can see this little situation. Who would say that is a bullying situation? Okay. And who would say that's not a bullying situation? And who would say we don't have enough information? And that's one of the challenges. How do we know without all the information? This is a prime example of one where we don't know. It's a very sad day, the day we have to tell children that we're not going to be friends with everybody we meet. We go through our early childhood, our toddler years, our very young years, saying, let's all be friends. You go off and be friends with him. Let's all be friends together. And in reality, we as adults know that that's not practical. That's not possible. That's not the way society works. It is lovely to meet you all here today, but many of you, I'm afraid, we probably won't end up being friends. But when I'm here today, there is a duty on me to show friendly behaviour, to show respectful behaviour, and to be friendly towards other people. So perhaps we need to think about how do we get across the message, like in this situation, around showing friendly behaviour, even to those that we're not friends with. What about this one? I was first, she pushed in. Who thinks yes? Who thinks no? Who thinks we don't know? Lots of don't know. So we've had our definition, we've had a good chat about it, but there's still some situations where we go, don't know. And this is another one. Is this one day this happened? Did she mean to push in or did she not realise you were standing there? Did it happen in the queue to get coffee and cupcakes while you were before this session? Do I have some intervention to do at the lunch break? What about this one here? There's a very important word in this one. Who thinks yes? There we go. Pretty much all of us. Yes, always. You're always doing that. You're always pulling my hair. But he's saying it doesn't hurt. I don't mean to cause you pain. It doesn't hurt. How many of us think that pulling someone's hair isn't going to hurt them? We know that pulling someone's hair hurts. You don't pull somebody's hair unless you want to hurt them. Let's try one more. We're only playing. They keep hitting me. What do we think? Yeah? Yes? Yeah, that's most of us. Yeah. Now, there's a bit of a question around this one again. We're only playing. We're only having fun. You keep doing it. They keep hitting me. So we've got that idea of a temporal phrase. We've got that idea of repeated. Also, look at the physique. Look at the power imbalance that's going on there. Three against one, a group against a single person. So we've got that real clear power imbalance going on there. One of the key thinkers in this area is a man called Ken Rigby, and he suggests there are seven factors in a bullying situation. Starts off with an intention to be hurtful. You have an intent to cause someone hurt. And if I think of Ruth, down here at the front, who is looking after me today. Let's pretend that I want to hurt Ruth. I intend to hurt her. And I do. I carry out that intention. I want to hurt her, and I hurt her. And it causes her harm. It causes a form of harm to her, a form of pain to her. And with my power, I carry out that act. I use my power, my strength, to overwhelm Ruth. And then he says there's often no justification for the act. I would suggest there is never a justification for the act. Sometimes there's an excuse. Sometimes there's a reason. But there's not a justification. All bullying is wrong. And I do it again and again and again. It may be the same behaviour, it may be different behaviour, but it's always that behaviour to cause her hurt, to cause her pain. and I derive a sense of satisfaction. I get something out of doing it. It satisfies some need in me to cause her pain. And if we think of any of the bullying situations that we may have been involved with, or any of the bullying situations that we may be aware of, and we think about how does it meet these seven factors, and how does the process follow these seven factors, it helps us to begin to think about what we're actually talking about in terms of bullying. Now, Rigby uses labels that we're uncomfortable with. He uses the term victim and he uses the term bully. And we don't like to use those. If you call a seven-year-old a bully, and you do it enough times, that's what he or she will become. And if you keep talking about someone as a victim, that's what they'll become. So how do we get to a point where we're talking about the behaviour and separating the behaviour from the young person? I don't have a problem with any seven-year-old. We have a responsibility to seven-year-olds. So if I label a seven-year-old based on his or her behaviour, I've got a concern about how I can help that young person. I have a concern with that young person's behaviour, with the fact that they are displaying bullying behaviour. I want to change the bullying behaviour. I don't want to change the child. I want to change the behaviour. So we need to think about how do we talk about this and what is the language that we can use whenever we're discussing this issue. And how big of an issue is this? As I said, the Department of Education undertook research back in 2002 and they've repeated that twice in 2007 and most recently in 2011. And you can see from the slide that it's not changed a lot in the last few years. In year six, primary six, it's gone down slightly. Year nine stayed exactly the same. So what more do we need to do? How else can we tackle this problem? And what does it look like? We need to know what it is. We've got our definition, our nice repeated use of power by one or more persons intentionally to hurt, harm, or adversely affect the rights and needs of another or others. I actually think I'm just going to get it as a tattoo down my arm. I say it so many times. And that's a lovely, nice sentence, but what does that actually mean to the people that we're working with, to the young people that we're trying to care for? So if we break it down and look at the different forms it can take in terms of the way that it displays itself, the physical, the hit, the kick, the punch, the steal, the trip over it, the pull hair, the verbal, the name-calling, the teasing, the spreading rumours, spreading gossip, the social exclusion, inviting everybody else in the group to your birthday party apart from one and leaving that person out. The indirect, the dirty looks, linked as well to the social exclusion. The sexual bullying that has become much more on the radar, and I know they're talking a bit more about that upstairs. The unwanted touches, the inappropriate touches, the inappropriate behaviour, something we need to be aware of. And of course, the one that we're all always talking about, cyberbullying. What is cyberbullying? We're going to talk a bit more about that in just a second. And then looking at the motivation. And what the research shows us is that young people who feel in some way different, in some way isolated, in some way unlike the others in their group, are more likely to experience bullying, are more vulnerable to bullying behaviours. And again, we're going to talk about some of these a little bit later on, but if we just have a quick glance through them. So cyber, the hot topic, what's it all about? Well, cyberbullying is bullying. Bullying. It still fits with our definition that we talked about a few minutes ago, but this time we're talking about bullying that is taking place online, through the computers, through mobile phones, through smartphones, through online gaming, through a whole range of new technologies. And whilst that technological element is very important and we need to be aware of that, we need to look at that phrase in its entirety. Cyber bullying. Very often we get caught up with cyber, that we don't make it to bullying. That's the bit that we're really interested in, the behaviour. I mentioned earlier rights and the rights of children. and the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, UNCRC, drawn together in 1989, signed by the UK government 24 years ago this month, and ratified in 1991, gives young people in our society certain rights. And you can see Article 19 of the UNCRC specifically gives young people the right to be protected from all forms of harm, including bullying. They have a right to an education. They have a right to the, I can never say the word, prohibition? Yeah, was that right? There we go. Of discrimination. And finally, the right to life. And as media reports show us, sometimes that can be the most serious effect of a bullying situation. So how do we take those rights and embody what they're about and what they give children and young people through our churches, through our young people's groups, through our communities? And we look at it very much as an ethos, the ethos-driven model of anti-bullying. And the ethos is the way in which our community interacts with each other and the values and beliefs that exist within that community. And if you look at the example, I'm not sure how clear it is, relatively clear, the tree, you can see holding everything up, holding up our practice, holding up our policy, holding up the way that we look after children and young people is the values that underpin what we're trying to do. That they give the support, they give the life, the same way as the roots give life to the tree, we can see how the values within our society give life and give support to the way that we try to counter this issue. So what are our values? We try to keep young people safe. We try to keep them secure. We try to ensure their well-being and their welfare. We want to make sure that we're supporting all young people, and I'm talking there about a solution focus. When bullying happens, are we looking for someone to blame, or are we looking to resolve the problem? Are we looking for a solution to the problem? We want to ensure that young people are listened to, that they're supported, irrespective if they're the one who has been bullied, who's experienced bullying, if they're the one who has done the bullying. How do we support everyone? And how do we make sure that everyone is aware of this issue and that we are there to help them? And talking that through into some of the preventative ways that we can help prevent bullying happening. Our positive behaviour expectations, what a lovely phrase. How do we tell children, our children, the children we work with, how do we tell them and communicate to them how we expect them to behave? We expect you to be polite. We expect you to be kind. We expect you to show friendly behaviour. Do we tell them that? Do we show them that? Do we model the behaviour that we want to see? Are we always sure that we are courteous and kind and considerate of others? Do we provide them with opportunities to learn about their responsibility, their social responsibility, in terms of their behaviour and how their behaviour has an impact on others? Do we give them the opportunity to develop positive relationships with their peers? We know that powerful, loyal friendships is one of the strongest protective factors for young people, giving them a support network. Think about the incredibly important role that you can play in providing that. We encourage young people to tell. If you're worried about something, if you have a concern, tell, tell, tell. But we have to also ask, are we ready to listen? Are we ready to listen when they do tell us that? Do we know what we can do and where the support is for us? And others, there's many other ways to look at this. Before I look specifically and very quickly at the responsive side, I just want to look a few minutes at cyberbullying, as you can see by this lovely picture behind me. 4th of February 2004, just over 10 years ago, does anybody know what happened that day? Or rather that night? Does anybody know what happened? Why that is such a significant date? I think I'm hearing it. Facebook. Very good. Somebody's watched the social network. 4th February 2004, overnight, Facebook appeared. In fact, back then it was called The Facebook. And do you know what? It's wonderful. It's brilliant. I love Facebook. It provides me with all sorts of opportunities to stay in touch with people, to connect with people, to share with people, to talk to people, to catch up with people. I went to university with a wide range of people from all over the world and made friends with people who now live on every continent. And through this wonderful new technology, we can keep in touch. We can share in each other's lives, despite the fact we're millions, thousands of millions of miles away from each other. But it does come with its difficulties. And one of the ones is understanding the jargon and the vast array of different ways that we can use the internet. I've put up some of the different apps and websites and social networks, and some of these you may be aware of and some of them you may not. Some of them you may use, some of them you may have never heard of. But do we really need to know that much about all of them to understand the bullying part? And it is a growing issue. It is something that has gotten bigger over the last few years. As you can see, the number of young people, particularly in terms of computers and experiencing bullying through their computer, is a very serious concern and has increased over the last 5 years. But we have an issue when we look at this statistic. We have an issue, and it's one of the main challenges for me whenever we think about this. It's all to do with our perceptions, to do with our perceptions and the way we talk about this. Does anyone have a smartphone? You know, one of those fancy smartphones that connect to all sorts of different things and you can pretty much run your whole life through a smartphone to an extent. We still call that a phone and we still refer to that as our mobile phone, but that is no more a phone than the toaster. It is a piece of technology that we use as a computer. It's a computer. I don't remember the last time I used my phone to make a telephone call. I don't remember the last time I spoke to someone on my telephone, on my mobile phone. But while you were down here earlier and I was upstairs, I was checking Twitter, I was having a look on the BBC news app, I was checking to see if the weather is going to be good enough for me to go for a nice walk on the beach this evening. I was doing all sorts of things, but I wasn't making a phone call. So we need to maybe think about the way that we think and the way that young people think about this technology. It's also about the way that we understand it, our confidence and our competence in using this technology, because it is ever-changing, and every week there seems to be something new coming up again and again. I want to also touch very quickly, because I know that Ruth will start giving me nods in a second to say hurry up, look very quickly at another issue that we've been looking at over the last few years, and that's the issue of diversity. The issue of the very diverse society that we now live in and ensuring that all our young people can be safe to access their education, can be safe to live within our society. And if we look at some of the isms, the obias, the ists that we would look at, you can see just a few of them on the screen behind me. And again, this was literally sat down one evening and did a bit of a mind dump, if you like, of all the different ones I could come up with. And thinking about how are they playing out within our society. Because we do live in an increasingly diverse society, and you can see from the census data from 2001 through to 2011 how our society changed. I'm going to give away one of the most closely guarded secrets at the Anti-Bullying Forum, my age. I left school and Northern Ireland in 2001. And I took off across the water over to Scotland for university. And I was there for just over 7.5 years, almost 8 years, I lived in Scotland. And I came back in 2009, 5 years and 1 week ago. And the society that I came back to was very different to the one I left. There was a sense of culture shock on the return and understanding this new society. I live away up in the North Coast, up in just outside Ballycastle, hence why I'm looking to see what the weather is going to be like if I can get out on the lovely beach this evening. And even in our small community, way up there in the North Coast, our community had changed and there was different demographics in our community. And of course, with that brings challenges. It brings challenges to us as adults. And it brings challenges to the young people and how we can make sense of this society and how we can understand the society that we live in. And I'm just showing a few slides here around some of the attitudes and some of the ways that adults and young people are viewing this society. And you can see from the social attitude study carried out by the Equality Commission some of the different ways that we look at some of the minority issues in our society. What I find really interesting on that slide is what's right down the very bottom. What's the one that is seen to be one of the least important? People of a different religion. Could we have said that 10, 15, 20 years ago? So what are the new challenges that are for our society? And we see that reflected in schools. We see that reflected in the way that young people think about this. We know that for many young people, race, colour can be an issue. Let's ask young people, do you think race and colour makes you has an effect on your likelihood to be bullied? So how are we promoting that ethos of inclusion and to make sure that everyone feels valued and respected within our communities? The challenges in doing that, our own ignorance, so many of those words up there, when I first sat down and looked at them, I had no idea what they meant. And as the anti-bullying coordinator, I really had to go and find out, what does it mean? What are we talking about here? So informing and going over my ignorance, recognising my own prejudice, the prejudice we all have in how we promote an anti-bullying culture, a culture where it is safe for young people irrespective of our own beliefs or our own opinions. The political correctness that we're very often afraid of saying anything, that we don't say anything at all. And how helpful is that in how we challenge? And the wider issues. I'm talking to you about racial bullying, about how we keep young people from ethnic minorities safe. I'm talking to you about disabled bullying and how we make sure young people with a disability are kept safe. I'm not talking to you about expansion of the European Union and immigration control. I'm not talking to you about same-sex marriage or adoption. I'm not talking to you about mental health services. I'm talking to you about how do we keep children safe, irrespective of who or what they are or where they're from. So how do we tackle this? How do we respond to this? Well, first of all, how do we know about it? I said earlier, we promote a telling culture, but are you ready to listen? Are you ready to take that disclosure? And I always think about the 5 R's. We have to receive it and receive it openly and give young people the opportunity to tell us in their own words and at their own time about the concerns they have. To reassure them that they have done the right thing by speaking out. To reassure them that they, and praise them, that they have found the strength and the courage to tell us when something's wrong. To respond in a way that you both agree on. Many young people don't tell us things because they're afraid that that gives up their control, that they have no say in what happens next. So having that conversation is, this is what we need to do together to respond to this. Reporting it. We all have a statutory duty. We all have a moral duty that if we are concerned about the welfare of a child, that we get help for it and we pass on that concern. And record. I could barely tell you what I watched on television last night. I actually have no idea. That's really bad. My memory's terrible. So we need to make sure that we're keeping those records, we're writing down those memories so as we know what has been said, so we're not miscommunicating that information. 2 + 2 = 5. Imagine you were at school and you wrote that. What would the response have been? Would you be shouted at? Would you be told off? Would you be humiliated? Would you get a slap around the back of the head? Hopefully not now. We don't do that. We help the young person understand why 2 + 2 = 4. And we help them to examine and think again about what they're doing. And that's why we need to think about the punitive side versus the restorative side. Is it all about punishment or how do we restore? I'm just going to quickly flick through these because I know we're running out of time. And I'm going to just finish off by giving you a couple of questions to think about. Very often, whenever a bullying situation happens, the first thing we say is, why did you do that? Why did you hit him? Why did you call him a nasty name? Why were you nasty to him? What is the answer we're looking for? It's because I have social difficulties. I'm not emotionally developed. I haven't had care from my parents to develop that skill of understanding how to view the world around me and how to interact with others. Of course not. So how do we ask questions that are more restorative? Questions like, can you tell me what happened? Not what did you do? What happened? What happened here? Tell me the story of what was going on. What were you thinking that led you to behave that way? What caused you to behave that way? Not why did you do it? What caused you to do that? What was it that you were thinking that made you behave in an inappropriate way? Who has been affected by what you've done? Your behaviour has had an impact on who? On whom? Who? Whom? I don't know. Who has been affected? And how have they been affected? How has your behaviour had an impact on someone else? How has it made them feel? And what do you need to do to make it right? What do you need to do to resolve the situation, to make it right, to make it better, to promote reparation? And that's not just go and say sorry to him. Sorry. Right, that's all done. How do we help young people to understand why they say sorry? To take the decision themselves to say sorry, to recognise their behaviour through using these questions, to recognise that behaviour and to apologise themselves. Because we have to. Because this is very serious stuff. This is a very serious issue. And from the final screen behind me, you can just see how serious this can get. The serious, long-lasting, and profound impact that it can have on the lives of young people. So what can we do together to make it stop? Thank you very much.
Morning to speak to us. We have some time for questions, folks, so I'll come down onto the floor with the microphone, so if you'd like to just raise your hands if you've anything. We've about 10 minutes, so if you've any questions that you'd like Lee to answer for you, don't be shy. Well, maybe I'll start with one, shall I? Lee, I was just wondering, as you were speaking there about how we address this, if you've any kind of practical advice for us. If we feel that in our own congregations we'd like to make sure that we have an anti-bullying philosophy or an ethos, what would your practical guidance be on how you might start that process with your volunteer leaders, maybe?
Okay. Well, I think for me, one of the key points, and I talked a bit more about it at the beginning, is we need to make sure that if it's a policy, if it's practice, if it's an ethos, if it's whatever we're doing in this area, that it reflects the whole community, that it's not just led from the top and it's top heavy and it's a certain small group of people who get together to decide what's going to happen. It needs to embody the whole congregation, the whole community. So getting the voice of the children themselves into that is really key. I know this term consultation can be quite a difficult term and it can be quite a meaty term, but I always say, to me, one of the best consultation tools, one of the best things to use to do a consultation is a cup of coffee and a cake. Have a cup of coffee and a cake. Maybe after church one day, coffee, cake, maybe even a wee bowl of soup, a tray bake, why not? And get people in and just sitting around having that discussion. Having the opportunity to say, what are our concerns? Are we worried? Is there a reason for us to be worried? And what can we do about it? How can we support each other? Doing that with the adults, with the children as well. I talked as well there about the different learning opportunities that we have with our young people. I'm thinking particularly through things like Sunday school, children's church, GB, BB, all the different youth groups that we have. What ways are there to use that power, to use those avenues, to have these discussions, to get the voice of the young people into what it is that we're trying to do, to make sure that we're starting from the right place and that we're developing it in the right way. And also to make sure that if something's not working or we want to change something, that we've got that evidence that we can use to change it.
No, anyone else?
Good. Oh, wait, I'm back.
Just speak nicely.
Usually we speak about bullying and abuse and so on in terms of the youth and the children. But what about the context of adult interaction? Do you have any comment to make on that, please?
Sure. From the anti-bullying forum's point of view, our focus is on children, is on young people. So up to the age of 18 is really where our focus would be. But it's clear that this is not an issue that is limited to childhood, that it can continue right throughout our lives. Indeed, many of the experiences that children have in terms of bullying in their childhood can very often stay with them right into their adult lives. We also know that where adults come together, where anybody comes together, there can be the opportunity for bullying to happen. There can be that possibility of the definition that I shared with you earlier, the repeated, the powerful, the intentional, hurtful behaviour to happen. And I think it's very important that we have a collective reminding each other of how we are expected to behave, we as adults are expected to behave, both in terms of how we live our lives, and also, as I said, in how we model that behaviour to other young people, to the young people we work with, and how we show young people how we expect them to behave, as opposed to just telling them how we expect them to behave. Okay. Did you have another? Did you have another question you want to ask?
Hi. I just wanted to say, do you agree that the church has a very important role to try and help young people realise real friendships rather than the virtual friendships that technology provides? At an Invest Youth conference last week, they were saying about how church is one of the few places where we have almost a technology-free zone except for the likes of PowerPoint and stuff for music. We don't actually have them using their phones all the time, and where they can actually spend time building proper friendships and talking about things, and that we really need to make more time for that because it's a very diminishing zone for children and young people.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more that there's a very large role for the church and for other faith-based organisations to be actively involved in this and to help recognise what real friendship is and what it means to be a friend, what it means to be a friend, and also how to recognise the qualities in friendship with other people. I mentioned there one of the key preventative tools in terms of building an anti-bullying culture is allowing young people the opportunity to develop those peer relationships, to develop positive, powerful, loyal friendships that provides them with that network of support. And yes, you do get concerned when you drive past a bus stop or you walk past a group of young people and everyone's doing that all the time. And it is, where is that opportunity for the young people to have that real face-to-face interaction coming from? I think it's not just for the church. I think it needs to be much wider than that. And I think one of the reasons why I personally am very, very keen to speak to groups like this is that we need to be promoting a consistent message that goes right across the lives of children and young people. We need to ensure that together we are all saying, this is not okay. This is not something we accept in our community. This is not something that we can accept in our society. So I think we need to get better at understanding the links and the shared responsibility that everyone who has an influence in the lives of children and young people has within this area. Is that okay? Does that answer your question? I hope.
Unlike your good self, I'm not really a fan of social media.
Okay.
My background's in education. And whereas I could deal with bullying issues in my school, I found it very difficult to deal with bullying issues which happened through social media, simply because I couldn't break into a pupil's Facebook page or Twitter account or whatever it was that they were involved in. I couldn't read their mobile phones. Mm-hmm. I couldn't deal with the issues which were taking place through technology in their own homes and their own studies and their home bedrooms. Now, we know, for example, that a number of youngsters, unfortunately and tragically, have taken their own lives as a result of online bullying. And my problem with it is that there's an area out there that really we can't deal with, mm-hmm. much as we'd like to, but it's another realm which we cannot break into. We can break into what is going on in the church, in the school, wherever it may be, but we can't break into what's going on their computer, on their phone, and so on. And that's the big problem that I have with this.
Okay. I think I'll answer your question in kind of two sections, if you like. The first one that I would look at is this idea of, from an education point of background, the responsibility of the school from 9 to 3:30, 9 to 3, 9 to 2, however it is. And how far does the responsibility of that school extend beyond those limits? So if a bullying situation is happening at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night, might be happening on Facebook, it might be happening on Twitter, it might be happening on a mobile phone, might be happening down the street, might be happening in the park, irrespective of where it is at that time, there is questions around who has responsibility for dealing with that. Who has the responsibility for safeguarding the child at that point in their lives? And to me, that comes back to the dual role of how we support young people and how we keep young people safe. The duty of safeguarding young people and promoting their welfare. So if we look at safeguarding, when young people are in our care and when they are with us, and indeed when they're going about their daily lives, how do we, as far as we can, keep them safe? How do we, as far as we can, ensure that there are safeguards in place, that there are processes in place to ensure that those children are safe? The other side is the promotion of their welfare. And whenever I was thinking about this a few weeks ago, I was thinking back to, does anybody remember the Tufty Club? Do you remember the Tufty Club in schools, the squirrel with the big bushy tail? And I remember in primary school, we were probably about P2, P3. It was definitely P2 or P3. I remember learning how to cross the road. And we learned about how we go to the edge of the road and we look left and we look right and we look left and we look right and we listen out and then we cross over the road. But there never was a road in the playground of my school. So I never put that learning into practice when I was in school. So why was I being taught about that? And that was all about the promotion of my welfare, to promote me, to educate and to help me understand how I can keep myself safe whenever I'm out there, that I can keep myself safe when I am using the road, when I'm crossing the street. And I think we need to be very focused on how we do that with the social network side, irrespective of whether it's happening in school or outside of school. We need to be thinking about how do we support the young people to understand their responsibilities whenever they're online. How do we help them to understand the risks they may face from bullying and from a whole range of other areas when they're online? The different ways that they can use these new technologies in ways that may cause us to be concerned about their welfare. How do we promote in them the understanding and the knowledge to, as far as possible, keep themselves safe in there? You talk about being able to access that information and not being able to go onto their Facebook or onto their phones, etc. And there are some questions about how appropriate that would be. I do think we need to get better at understanding the online policing, if you like, how we can report inappropriate material, how we can flag inappropriate material. Facebook, Twitter, all the social networks are user-generated content websites. Everything that appears on these websites is created by a user. You don't have some guy sitting in California creating things to put on it. We create them ourselves. We put messages on there. So there is a collective responsibility across the community of those who use Facebook, those who use Twitter. Facebook, incidentally, if it was a country, would be the third largest country in the world. It is bigger. It is the only countries that are bigger than it are India and China. That is a huge community, and that community, we need to be promoting young people to understand their role and their responsibility in taking action against any material on there that they deem to be inappropriate or offensive, and making sure that they're equipped with the skills and the tools to be able to do that. You then have the second part behind that of the harm and the distress that it causes to the child. So as I say, if it happens at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night, as a school, you may not have the authority to take action on that, but at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning, you've got a child coming through your door who is upset and unable to learn. So how do you deal with that situation? How do you build the strength in that young person to ensure that they are able to learn and that they are supported through the situation and through the experience that they've had? Okay, I can see people hovering at the door. So I'm
yes, we are out of time. But once again, Lee, just on behalf of everyone that's come along, thank you so much for giving up your time. I'm on behalf of Taking Care, thank you. And also, I'm sure if folks have questions and they'd like to talk to you, you're going to be here for a little